You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
We're going to do our rewind next, thanks to New Zealand On Air.
And thanks to Lucia for doing this interview with the Jean-Paul Sartre Experience, Gary Sullivan. It's going to be a good time.
It's time for NZ On Air Music Presents Rewind.
The band was formed in 1985. What was the process of forming the band like?
I don't know. It was just fell together, really. It was we were sort of friends living in the same flat at the time, and it just sort of landed up moving from hanging out together to playing music together. So there was no real let's go and make a band. It just seemed to be instruments would arrive, and the band was born out of living together.
Cool. How did the name Jean-Paul Sartre Experience come about?
We had a friend at the time that was, lots of people were experimenting with all sorts of mind-altering substances at the time, I think. And one friend particularly was, delving deeply into some odd psychotic drugs, and he was having these what he called Jean-Paul Sartre experiences at the time. I think he was reading a lot of Jean-Paul Sartre, so we thought it was funny at the time, and we had to live with it for a few years after that, really. But
Your first cassette tape came in a dog food tin. Why was
That's
this?
Right. Oh, why was it? I think it was because we didn't have a record company, and we had a bunch of songs that we wanted to put out, and I don't know, maybe one of the days had some dog food cans lying around, and because we all had dogs at that point, a bunch of us owned large dogs, and it seemed to be something that we did at the time, own large dogs, and the cassette ended up in a dog food tin, and someone went out and bought a few more dog food tins, and that's how we put the first recording out, which was quite cool. It was quite a good thing to put a record out in.
Yeah, it's totally cool. That tape did really well. It initially sold out and sparked the interest with Flying Nun, who went on to release 3 EPs and 3 albums with. How was your experience with them?
Oh, it was really great. At the time, there was nobody else would touch us with a barge pole. I don't know, Flying Nun signed us, and nobody else probably would have. I doubt if many other labels at the time would have signed The Clean,
Yeah. You also recorded the music for the film Crush. What was working on a movie soundtrack like?
Oh, it was really great. It was cool. We'd always been interested in, all of us are huge film fans, so the idea of working on a film was pretty interesting to us. And we all liked Alison MacLean's short, The Kitchen Sink, which the Headless Chickens had done the soundtrack for. So we met her, and we got on well with her, and so it was a really great thing to do. It wasn't quite as free and easy as we thought it would be. With a film like that, with a relatively large budget, which it was at the time, and a woman who has a very strong idea of what she wants and is holding the reins quite tightly. Alison was quite involved in the process as well. I remember there being points where I was playing some pretty rudimentary stuff on a keyboard, and I almost had Alison behind me holding my hands going, no, that note, no, that note. So, yeah. It was a really good experience, but it wasn't. We weren't left to our own devices, but it was cool. It was good.
Yeah, you toured with Straightjacket Fitz and the Bats through the US, UK, and Europe. I've interviewed both of their frontmen, and they sound like quite fun dudes. Do you have any notable stories from this tour?
Any notable stories? I don't know. I mean, I can't really think of any. Well, actually, no, I'm thinking we did it again. We did two tours together. We did one with Straitjackets and the Bats, and then we did another one later on with just us and the Straitjackets. Was winter, and we had a we travelled around in a broken down bus that had a broken toilet, and it had. It was a bus that was shouldn't be down the road, but we were driving around Europe in it. I can't really think of any interesting anecdotes, to be honest. It was just a good time, good music, good fun.
Yeah, some real winter dance party tour vibes going on.
That's right. Yeah, no, it was great. It was a good time. We all had a good time mostly.
Do you have a...
But then we all came back and broke up straight after that tour, so I don't know, it must have been that good for some people.
Did you have a favourite destination that you performed in?
I don't know. I mean, I always loved playing in New York. I love playing in Berlin as well, actually. We did this weird gig in Berlin where the promoter thought it would be a good idea. We played at a venue where... We played in a small room, and Paul Weller was next to us playing in a really, really large room. And the promoter put us on after Paul Weller, sort of thinking that after everyone finished watching Paul Weller, they'd come in and watch us. But as we were playing, we had like about 3,000 people come and poke their heads in the door and then move off. So that was, you know, that was a good disavow band 3,000 times over in the space of half an hour. Still, I remember it being an enjoyable show. The people that were there, I guess.
Before all of this, I think you were forced by the Jean-Paul Sartre estate to change your name. Is that when you know you've really made it, when an influential philosopher's estate recognises you?
Yeah, well, no, that didn't happen though. That was what the record company said. What happened was the record company thought our name. After a pretty loose experience with Flying Nun signed a deal with Mushroom Records. They decided that, you know, we should take the step into sort of pop stardom, which was doomed from the beginning. And one of the things we should do was change our name, shorten it, because Jean-Paul Sartre's experience was too much of a mouthful for everybody. And some of us in the band thought that was ridiculous and were totally opposed to the idea of changing the band's name. Somehow, I don't know how the process went, but we agreed to shorten the name to the JPS experience, which made, you know, no sense at all. It was just a cop-out. But, we did the cop-out, and we didn't sell any more records. Oh, I guess maybe we did sell a few more records, but I doubt because we changed the name, you know. But it's a sort of death of a band when a band changes. When you change something as basic as the name of your band, it's sort of the writing's on the wall, really. And it kind of was, really. As soon as you question yourself, then there's trouble brewing, I think. So yeah, it had nothing to do with Jean-Paul Sartre's estate. That was the thing. That was what was written out there in the media. But it wasn't as interesting as that.
No,
I don't think they even know who we are. I don't know. Maybe they would now. Now with the internet, you know, it would be a lot easier to find out about some tiny band at the bottom of the world. But at the time, yeah, no.
Oh, well, there's always a good band versus record label story in there, so...
Yeah. I always really liked the name, though. I thought it had a good ring to it. But, we're forever known as JPS Experience now. It's a shame, really, you know. It's almost like another band, actually.
There's lots of different... brandings. Personally, I like to go by the original name of the band.
Yeah, totally, yeah. That's what it was.
Cold outside, knife edge, knife
That was Rewind, presented by NZ On Air Music.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95bfm.com/bcasts.